Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, lots and lots of rumors. There's a couple rumors about the new Pixel Watch. We got some renders and, you know, if it's going to look like that, I'm totally on board. We also have some, let's not call it rumors, but a few insights about the upcoming Pixel 5a that you may or may not have seen our name associated with already. We'll talk about what happened with that, give you the background. Amazon released some new Echo Buds, and we're expecting some Pixel Buds A in the next few weeks. There's a new Samsung Unpacked event to look forward to, and Google's getting Flock blocked. What does that mean? Joining me to talk about this and more, R. Wagner, welcome back. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm good. It was nice to be off for a week, but also I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. Jerry Hildenbrand, how are you?
What's up, everyone?
What's up? Is that your new catch? New catchphrase?
No, I just couldn't think of anything witty to say after that flock block thing. So
yeah, I mean that's gonna be the high of the show.
Yeah, so that's the title. It's gotta be.
It's downhill from here, basically.
And it was a low hill to start with then.
Oh man. No, I mean you couldn't not make that joke. I didn't expect that to be the easy win, but when I saw the title, I was like, come on. All right, so let's dig into it. We also want to talk about the OnePlus Watch, which was the review of the week. It seems like the review that everybody just tore into. It was really interesting seeing how uniform the negativity was yesterday. There were a few reviews that were positive on it, and we'll get into, I think, why some were more positive than others. But let's start there. Harish is not here, but he reviewed it for us. He gave it 3 out of 5. And he basically said that for $159, you can do quite a bit better than this. And the justification for it was it's super buggy, right? This is a platform that until recently we understood was running Wear OS. And OnePlus, in order to extend battery life as long as possible, made the decision to change it to an RTOS, a real-time OS, pretty late in the game. And as a result, perhaps needed to adapt it from some other version that was floating around at Oppo or develop it on its own. And what it did was it customized this real-time OS to look and feel as much like Wear OS as possible. So you swipe up from the bottom to get to notifications. You swipe down on it to get to your quick settings. You swipe right to get to all of the apps. And there are some complications/widgets on the 50 or so watch faces that come pre-installed. But what this is not is a honest-to-goodness smartwatch in the sense that there is no third-party app compatibility. You will never be able to do that on here like you can on a Wear OS watch or even on a Samsung Galaxy watch, even on a Fitbit. You really don't have any real customization possibilities aside from the watch faces. And what I found most frustrating is the same thing that I find frustrating about every RTOS-based watch, and that's from companies like Huawei and Amazfit and countless others, is that there's no way to interact with the notifications. And Ara, you can attest to this, right? Wear OS doesn't do a lot of things right, but one
it does
thing it
notifications
did,
brilliantly.
It's the best implementation, even including Wear OS, including Watch OS on the Apple Watch. Wear OS is just a notification triage machine.
Yes, and that's why I love it.
It's native to Android. It uses the same APIs that Android uses. You can quick reply using a keyboard. You can use your voice. There, you can get detailed notifications if you get like an email, for instance. There's just a lot you can do. On here, you get nothing.
Can you still bring up a little keyboard and type out a response on the watch?
On the OnePlus? No, that's...
I mean, on Wear OS.
Technically, you can. I really don't recommend it if you don't want to use one of the pre... Like, whenever you go to do a reply to something on Wear OS, it'll give you, like, a list of, like, 15 to 20 suggested replies.
Okay, that's
and
cool.
then under that... And then under that, there'll be an emoji button, a microphone button, and a keyboard button.
Yeah.
So, yes, you could technically use a keyboard, but why would you when Assistant has gotten so much better on the watch than it was 2 years ago?
My thumb's bigger than the face of the watch. I could never do it. I tried it once. But
That's the kind of thing of you would need to have, like, the finest fine tip stylus and just hang it from the side of the watch.
All right, we derailed this. Sorry,
yeah,
OnePlus.
You
watch
you guys
sucks.
Are you're already. I mean, this is a record. You took the conversation back to Wear OS much faster
Wear
than
OS
I even thought
sucks,
it was possible.
But it's so much better than this fake real time OS. I hate that word, by the way. It's not in real time. But anyway.
And I mean, let's also keep in mind that this is basically a fitness watch. This is basically a fitness band in the form of a smartwatch, but it doesn't do fitness that well.
No, that's what I wanted to finish the thought on. So, you know, it looks like a smartwatch, it acts like a smartwatch, it smells like a smartwatch, but then when you start doing smartwatch things on it, the actual data is not that useful. So
it kills me. You can't even look at it and see what time it is without turning it on.
Yeah, there's no always on display. Again, this is all for battery life, and I actually think OnePlus will add an AOD later on, but let me just talk about the like severe limitations. There's no Wi-Fi on board, so transferring between your phone and your watch is just painfully slow. GPS is not that reliable. The heart rate monitor is extremely unreliable when it's when your heart rate is not obviously pumping hard. So what I mean by that is my idle heart rate. My resting heart rate was measured at 104 beats per minute.
You're going to die.
Which is not right, because I know for a fact that my resting heart rate is considerably below that. For a couple of workouts, I wore both an Apple Watch and the OnePlus Watch. And then for the next set, I used a OnePlus Watch and a Fitbit Sense. And the elevated heart rate, so the cardiovascular heart rate when I was like going hard on the bike was right. I mean, it was pretty well within the range. But just resting heart rate was completely off. I heard our friend Sherilyn Lowe at Engadget, her resting heart rate was 40 beats per minute. So the opposite end of the problem.
She going to
die
too.
You dead if that's the case, basically. Or you're just insanely fit, but either way, there's the sleep tracking data is basically useless, and the step counter is the pedometer feature is completely wrong. If you watch Mr. Mobile's review, you'll hear that he took three watches on a walk, and the OnePlus Watch got the step count wrong by like 6,000. It was just very incorrect. The other thing is that the OnePlus Watch is launching with two major upcoming software patches, one in at the end of April and one at the end of May, that are ostensibly going to fix a lot of the problems that it launched with and add a bunch of features, but that likely means that they should have kept this in the studio for a couple more months to iron out the bugs. At this cost, $159, stick with like an Amazfit GTS or a cheaper like Tick Watch.
Or even the original Samsung Galaxy Watch Active is $150 or $100 if you get it renewed on Amazon right now. I know this because I was looking for one for my dad, but you can get so many better watches than this for the same or less money.
Or you can buy three Mi Bands that you tell the time when you look at
Mi Bands.
Yeah, Mi Bands that work. They do exactly what they're supposed to do. They don't do a lot, but they're like $50. And sounds to me like they're better than this piece of crap OnePlus is trying to sell.
Basically,
yeah. And the two software updates aren't going to fix the fact that you're never going to get proper apps on this thing.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like OnePlus just put this out there so that it could have a watch next to its earbuds, next to its phones, right?
I mean, it sold out, so they knew they could get people to buy it, which
oh, yeah, they're the masters of that.
Yeah.
They get people to buy
anything.
I mean,
sure, you sold out of how many, though? I don't...
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean today?
Maybe they sent them all to reviewers, and that was it. There were none other built.
Well, it's especially funny right now when there's such a parts shortage that it's so hard to keep anything in stock that companies may just turn it around and try to make it a PR win by saying, oh no, we sold out, where the actual inventory was like 1,000 or 5,000 units. It's not impressive unless you know the actual numbers. It's like what Amazon does, and it says, we had the best Prime Day ever, without giving a single number as to what that means, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would avoid the OnePlus Watch for now, unless you really... And again, like, the other part of this is that OnePlus did not make this a better experience for OnePlus users.
Good.
So the... No, but on the flip side, right? Like, if you're talking about Samsung Galaxy Watches working slightly better or more seamlessly with a Galaxy phone, that's true because you don't have to install the companion apps and it just syncs better.
Well, you still do, but you don't have to... The companion app doesn't have to do as much of the heavy lifting.
Right. But what I mean here is that there's literally no difference. You download the OnePlus Health app from the Play Store, and it's the same experience on a OnePlus phone as it is on a Galaxy phone. And that is not the kind of ecosystem lock-in that I'm sure OnePlus would like, where you have a OnePlus phone with a OnePlus with OnePlus earbuds and a OnePlus watch, and it all works really nicely together. And it took Samsung a really long time to rival Apple in that regard, and it's now feeling a little bit like that they're there. And OnePlus is trying to make it look like that's the case, but I really don't think that there's any, I hate using the word synergy, but like there's no synergy there.
But hey, there's a never settle watch face. But you can't see it unless you reach down and turn the watch on.
Does it at least have tilt to wake? Because I mean, I turn off AOD on every single watch I own.
Yeah,
unless it's a Tick Watch.
The tilt
Pro.
To wake is great. Like the responsiveness on this thing is excellent. Like I'll give it that.
Good.
It feels like a very smooth experience. Once you get it set up, it's a really good timepiece. You know, if you're doing simple workout tracking, it does work for that. But as Jerry mentioned, like, it doesn't do anything better than a $100 Amazfit or a $60 Mi Band or even like a Fitbit Inspire 2, which costs like $80, or a Charge 2 or a Charge 4, which costs $130, right? Like, if you don't care about the smartwatch stuff, there are way better fitness trackers out there that just own the fact that they're fitness trackers rather than trying to, you know, trick you into thinking that it's more than it is. On the other side of the spectrum, though, I want to talk a little bit about the new Pixel Watch rumors. So we'll talk about the Pixel 5a debacle in a minute. But on the same day as that, John Prosser leaked a whole bunch of Pixel Watch, what looks like Pixel Watch renders based on leaked press marketing material that they received. So Ara, walk us through these leaks and what this, you know, essentially tells us about the Pixel Watch if it does exist.
Well, the first thing that I saw was this has a non-traditional lug, and that makes me cry a little bit inside because that means that I'm going to have to buy special bands for this thing. But it has edge-to-edge, like, curved glass. So, and like most watches, the bezel comes up and over, and then you have your touchscreen, and this looks like it's going to be just like a seamless glass top. And then you're just gonna have a little, yeah, that's the thing. I'm gonna break this thing so quickly if I take this to Disney with me, whenever I can get my hands on one, because dear God, I want to get my hands on one of these and see how quickly Wear OS starts lagging on it. But the colors that they showed were pretty. The screen looks nice and big. It doesn't look like it has, like, if you're going to have edge-to-edge glass, it makes sense that you don't have very much of any bezel around the edges of the screen. I mean, we've been waiting for a Pixel Watch for 5 years now. And now that I see it, or whatever the recreations of the press renders that they have here, it looks clean. I'm not super happy with it, but it looks clean.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot to go on here.
They only show like two or three different watch faces. They don't show any of the apps. They don't show any of the core Wear OS UI. They just show the watch face and how it looks there. Right. So I want to see whether or not they're changing. I want to see if the Pixel Watch is going to have any UI, major UI differences for Wear OS. I want to see if it's going to get any optimization. I want to see how these actual bands connect, because I just see black and blue plastic and no clasps. So I'm hopeful, but I'm not as hopeful about the Pixel Watch as I am whenever I see any of the Galaxy Watch 4 or Galaxy Watch Active 4 leaks.
You know, I can tell you everything you need to know about the Pixel Watch right now. The hardware is going to be the thing everybody complains about. There's going to be 100 things that suck in it. There's going to be things that, you know, have one side, people love it, another side, people hate it. But it's going to run Wear OS as well as that little Qualcomm chip can do. That's all Google cares about here, is let's put out a watch that actually doesn't lag and get crappy.
Here's my prediction. We'll see. I had somebody tweet me the other day. They were listening to an episode from last year where I was predicting something about the upcoming Galaxy S21, and I got it completely wrong. So I'm 0 for 1 here, but I'm gonna make some outlandish predictions, okay? And we'll see if I'm right. This will not be powered by a Qualcomm Wear chip. I believe it will be a custom chip.
I hope
that
so.
Will be built by Samsung SLI, like the GS101 that we talked about last week, right? Google is building its own silicon. There is absolutely no reason to believe that it is not building a version of the GS101 for smartwatches. It'll have fewer cores. It will probably have a bunch of Google-specific always on. It'll basically take versions of the coprocessors that are in the Pixel 6, and it will miniaturize them and make them super efficient and put them in the Pixel Watch. But it will not have all that Qualcomm Wear, Snapdragon Wear baggage that every other Wear OS watch has been encumbered with. Even the new Snapdragon Wear 4100, which is considerably more efficient and powerful and more modern.
But the problem is that it's too expensive for any watchmaker to justify putting it in their watch, which is why we've seen most of the Wear OS watches in the last year still use the 3100, even though we know the limitations of that hardware.
The MobVoi just released a version of the TicWatch Pro that's running the 2100. If you're like that, that is how much Qualcomm is asking OEMs to spend on the 4100. It is not feasible. The only Wear OS watch right now that runs Qualcomm's flagship wearables chip is $400. So you can take from that what you will.
And I love the TicWatch Pro 3, but I can't justify telling people to spend $400 on it.
I could buy a damn nice watch for $400.
So that's my prediction on the hardware side. It will be a more efficient version of the GS101 that'll ship in the Pixel 6. I mean, think about the messaging there. We are launching a brand new Pixel, maybe even two Pixels, right? Pixel 6, and we have reason to believe that they're going to bring back the Pixel 6 XL or whatever they call it. So they're going to have two Pixel 6s. They're going to have a Pixel Watch. It'll all run versions of the same Google-built silicon. That is a very impressive story to tell after a few years of kind of flailing in the hardware specs standpoint. On the software side, we're looking at a complete redesign of Wear OS, right? Front to back, top to bottom, whatever, you know, preposition you want to use. And it will have significant Fitbit integration, right? The Fitbit.
Well, yeah, that's given.
Right? Like the Fitbit deal is closed. Fitbit is now a Google company. We are going to hear next week as we're recording this what Fitbit has in store for its spring collection. But it would not surprise me if Fitbit is on stage in October alongside the Pixel team being like, we're no longer releasing dedicated Fitbit hardware. Here is a Pixel watch powered by Fitbit or whatever, and it'll have Fitbit integration.
I'm willing to bet the Fitbit is still going to do the fitness bands, but Fitbit might not sell a actual watch anymore and just defer to Wear OS.
Totally, exactly.
All this talk, though, that's really bad for the Android Wear ecosystem if it plays out like Daniel says.
But what is the Wear OS ecosystem? It's Fossil Group.
A bunch of people wasting money on watches that kind of suck. That's what I think it is. Yeah.
And the people that buy those watches are not looking for tech products, got to remember, right? So they're not really...
But what I meant was every other manufacturer, it's stagnated. Once Google moves to its own silicone, and I have these reservations about the phone too. That's the reference design they use to build the software. Then they got to try to make that work for another chip, and that never goes smoothly.
Yeah, my question there is, if Google's going to put its own chip into the Pixel 6, does that mean we're going to see some sort of reference so that way Android developers can start building apps and making sure that they work with whatever the new chip system is?
At the app level, everything should be fine because that's all APIs. But like hardware support, Samsung's next phone is going to have something newer in it than Google's next phone. And Samsung has to work to get that supported well.
Yeah, but that Samsung's been doing that independent of Google forever. I mean,
yeah,
Project Mainline was built to solve that very problem, and it's working, and it's getting better in Android 12.
I guess. Yeah, it's getting better. Yeah, I would think that Google needs to build Android on the hardware that all OEMs can buy.
I mean, nothing says they won't sell this chip to other manufacturers for the watch.
Maybe.
I mean, if you're gonna start making your own chip,
there's absolutely no way that'll happen. No, I mean, Google. This is Google's chance to take ownership over the platforms that it builds. Right? It's taken them long enough to build their own silicon, get it to the point where they can put it in consumer products. They're going to go that extra mile. They're not going to make... They do this with Pixel phones already, where they've built certain Pixel-only features into their devices. And then they determine, based on the potential, you know, ecosystem effect, whether it's worth bringing them down through, you know, the publicly available services like Google Assistant, or whether they keep them on Pixel phones. And they've been doing this since the original Pixel. So why wouldn't they continue doing that? But now with the backing of a silicon team, it makes perfect sense.
I don't know. I mean, I think if you're going to go to all the trouble of making a watch platform that actually freaking works, since I'm sorry, but Qualcomm's just doesn't seem to work. The 4100 is too expensive for anybody to use. The 3100, we know where the limitations are. And the 2100 is just old. Like, if Wear OS as a platform is going to continue, we need better core hardware that manufacturers can then put into watches that look better.
Right, but right now it's a chicken or egg problem.
Right. And if you think of a smartwatch a little differently, consider it as a second screen. All it needs is hardware to power the components, if it can communicate with the host operating system better. That's, you know, like OnePlus's watch would be perfect if Google had taken ownership and made it integrate into Android, where it, you know, whether you use Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, or any type of nearby connection sharing, just it only mirrors what you would see on your phone. If you think of a smartwatch that way, Google could easily build a very cheap chip that would do that very well.
We'll see. I hope it comes to fruition. I also, you know, I just want to end this thought by saying, like, Google has always enacted more control over Wear OS than it has Android, right? The updates come from Google. They get distributed to Fossil Group and Mobvoi, and then those companies get to modify them, I guess Oppo as well now. You get to modify them to some extent, But from what we understand, Google has to approve all of those changes, yeah. even the front end changes that like Oppo implemented on the OnePlus on the Oppo Watch to make it considerably look different than say a Fossil or a Mobvoi version. Google has to approve all of those changes, right? And it comes that cycle is very different than it is on mm-hmm. on phones. So there's no reason to think that even if Google launches this new and improved experience on the Pixel Watch, it won't offer a version of that to its existing customers without the Fitbit integration, without the co-processor improvements, et cetera, because that maintains the way that Google has been doing AOSP versus Pixel Android, right?
Right.
It's the same
right.
system. They can just do a version of that for Wear OS and hopefully make Wear OS popular enough again that other companies like Samsung take notice. I mean, we may actually by then have a Samsung-powered Wear OS watch again. We'll
Please,
see.
Dear God, give me a Wear OS-powered Galaxy Watch Active 3.
But if
like,
that's the case...
this has the best hardware. I just want it to have the best notifications, too.
Notifications on Tizen are very
they're
good.
They're okay. They're
like,
not as good as
like
Wear OS, but they're okay.
Yeah.
It's just whenever I get out of like a meeting or something, I'll have to swipe through like 14 different pages of notifications. Whereas on Wear OS, it's just, okay, scroll through one single list and it's okay. Swipe, tap, swipe, tap.
Yeah. No, you're right.
You're just too popular.
That's the thing. Turn off Slack
popular.
Notifications. All right, let's move on. I want to talk quickly about this Unpacked event. So we heard that there is a third Unpacked event for 2021. It's going to be April 28th. It is Samsung's, quote, most powerful Galaxy. From what we have been led to believe, it is not a phone-related event. It is probably laptops. And given the fact that Samsung launched its flagship, we quote, flagship Chromebook already this year, it's probably Windows laptops, which makes sense because most powerful would probably be Intel or AMD powered. That being said, it's Samsung. Whatever happens, we'll cover it. And I don't know, Samsung taking Windows laptops more seriously, I like that. I think it's good for everybody. And we are actually doing more Windows-related content on Android Central because we felt like it's not right to cover Chromebooks in as an island, right? There's so much competition from budget Windows laptops these days that it just makes sense to cover it as like a holistic vertical. So you'll see more Windows-related coverage on AC going forward.
Do you know what I'm guessing? I'm guessing this is a Samsung Ultrabook with that Microsoft SQ2 they announced in late 2020?
Absolutely not. There's
you don't
no
think
way
so?
Samsung could not say it's their most powerful. The Galaxy S21 is more powerful than the SQ2. Come on. Let's
no,
be
it's not.
I mean, Jerry, the SQ2
is
basically it's a modified version of the Snapdragon 865.
Yeah, but what they modified is great. It's got the best mobile GPU in existence and better connectivity. It's pretty awesome, I think. Faster memory support. I would love to see it. Even if that's not what they show off, I still want to see it.
Also, how many Samsung laptops have borne the Galaxy name so far? Because I got to say, that's a very limited
right.
list.
Right. When I hear Galaxy, I think mobile. And that means that it's going to be always connected, 5G, Bluetooth 5, the whole shebang.
Mm.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'm hoping for too much. And we'll know couple weeks how wrong I am.
I was hoping there would be a watch at this one, but I'm going to have to wait till July whenever they announce the Fold 2.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's based on the 8CX Gen 2, which is, again, like a slightly modified version of the... It's a 7-watt version of what it makes for phones, which is a 5-watt part. So it's not considerably more powerful. And I don't even think it has the X1 core.
No, it doesn't. It still has Cryo 495s. That much
right.
I do know.
So it's not like, I'm sure that from a multi-core perspective, it is considerably more powerful than the 888 because the TDP is just, it's right. bigger. It has more thermal, it has a larger thermal envelope, but from a watts per site or from a performance per cycle perspective, it's still not going to be as efficient as the 888. And honestly, I don't think this is what they're going for. I can see them doing that next year, maybe when the, or later this year, perhaps, but I think this is an Intel and AMD.
Okay, well, I'll bet you a soda since both of us are completely on the wagon now.
Sure, I'll bet you you can have some orange soda and you can buy me a coffee if
that works if for I'm me. Right. I want me a good old knee high.
All right, perfect. All right, let's talk quickly about these earbuds. So today we're recording this Wednesday. Amazon's new Echo Buds are coming next month. They are smaller. They have noise canceling. They are no longer powered by Dolby. They are now powered by their own ANC algorithms. They have an Amazon logo on each earbud, which is kind of gross, but I guess that's what happens when you want to put more brand power behind your products. They are
It's not that Amazon orange. It's just an embossing.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's fine. It's just like, it's the thing that you see, right? It sticks out of your ear, you notice it.
It's like all the stickers on a NASCAR car.
I don't know. I don't think you're going to be able to notice the swoosh of the Amazon smile any more than like the texturing on these Tautronic Liberty Air 94s that I have, which have a very similar groove on them around where the touchpad is.
It doesn't matter. I don't want nobody close enough up to my head to be looking in my ear holes. See, so that's matters.
Nobody's gonna even notice.
If you can see this logo, you are too close.
That's right. It's like backup, asshole. Just have like a tiny little sticker on each earbud.
Oh, put money in the swear jar. I'm gonna be.
That's
rich
okay. It's not a swear word. Asshole's not a swear word.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is.
Nah. The hell you say, you son of a bitch.
Give me a break. It's my podcast. I can say what I want.
Hey, can I say the F word?
Maybe at the end. We'll give people a sufficient warning.
Okay.
So these are 20% smaller. As I said, they are IPX4 water and dust resistant, or they water resistant. They have, what's the battery life here? 5 hours per charge with 15 hours in additional charges in the case. There is an optional wireless charging version of the case, but the default one comes without wireless charging. It is now USB-C powered, which is amazing. Finally, that was my biggest gripe with the first gen. And they are $120 MSRP. Ooh. But if you order them during the pre-order period, you can get them for $20 less. So it'll be $100 for the non-wireless charging version and $120 for the wireless charging version. And they come with 6 months of Amazon Music Unlimited and Audible Plus.
Okay. That explains the $100.
Like let's be honest here. This is Amazon doing triage for its own wireless earbuds listing the same way that they do it for other categories.
Mm-hmm.
You search wireless earbuds on Amazon. It's the Tautronic stuff that Ara said. It's the Jabra Elite 75T. It's the Samsung Galaxy Buds Plus. Right, all around that $100 price point. This is going to be the first result you see. It's going to be pushed like crazy, and they are pretty good. If they sound anything like the original Echo Buds, they're going to sound pretty good, good enough for most people. And that's all Amazon needs. This is basically a white label version of every earbud you can buy on Amazon.
I expected to see the next generation of Echo Buds shoot out at like $59.99 because Amazon loves to do that too. But they're bundling $500 worth of services into your purchase. It's $100 is a steal.
Yeah, but I mean, these are also premium-ish buds, right? These are ANC. They have decent drivers in them. Like, these are not bare bones Qualcomm-powered crap, right? So they're trying to thread that needle. And if you compare prices between it and something like the Galaxy Buds Pro, which are double the price. Even something like the Anker Soundcore Liberty Air 2 Pro, which are $130 and probably sound a little bit better. it's just nothing comes close.
So, yeah, I just, you know, the Amazon playbook, like their basics brand is to just undercut the hell out of everything.
Totally.
And sell enough volume to make up for it. So I expected a super cheap price on these and was wondering why they were charging so much. But I see that they really made it a great buy, even if they didn't cut the price cheap to kill the competition.
Exactly. So then now we have those. They're coming out in May. We also may see a pair of Pixel Buds A. Are these leaked earlier or last week? Google accidentally included them in a marketing, in like a photo of a bunch of products on the Pixel Store page, Google Store page. Tell us about what we know so far about these buds.
So we know that they're going to be called, or we're pretty sure they're going to be called the Pixel Buds A. They're going to be a more affordable version of the Pixel Buds, which means I guess we're not getting active noise canceling, which I'm still bummed about. At least we're getting some cool colors. It looks like it's color matched to the Pixel 5. Or maybe we're going to get another different shade, like we're going to get another shade of green for the Pixel 6. I'm hoping we're still keeping the wireless charging because the wireless charging is God and I don't want to give it up.
You ain't getting wireless charging on a cheap pair of Pixel Buds. Sorry.
Let me dream. But so we're just like the Pixel A series is the essential experience with a much lower price tag. We're expecting to see the same thing with the earbuds. So yeah, they'll probably knock off the wireless charging and maybe knock down a little bit of the extra battery that's in the case. I don't know. There's a lot of ways to make these more affordable, but since they didn't have active noise canceling to begin with, that's not something you can take away. So I'm hoping that these are $80 or less. If you're not going to have active noise canceling, please let them be $80 or less.
Right. Yeah, I don't think they will be. I think they'll be probably in the $100 to $120 range.
For that range, it better have wireless charging, like seriously.
But now we know what the benchmark is, right? Amazon has set the benchmark at $120. Samsung did that too with the Galaxy Buds Plus. They were $150 when they launched, but you can now get them for $120 pretty consistently. And that's where they're going to stay. That $100 to $120 mark is like the medium level of premium earbuds. So
I don't, it would be, if I was shopping for a pair of earbuds with noise cancellation and wanted the best price, it would be hard for me to buy anything but the Galaxy Buds. Because so many people have so much good things to say about them.
I cannot argue with you. I really tried to find fault with the Galaxy Buds Pro. They're obviously more expensive, but they're almost faultless. Like they are that good.
I need to try one of the Samsung ones. I didn't want to spend that much money because I'm almost positive that none of them fit me properly. Like I was still stunned that the Pixel Buds fit me as well as they do.
Honestly, the ones that fit me the best are the Soundcore, the Liberty Air 2 Pro.
The
they
ones
come
you
with
can
like
twist.
12 different,
yep.
different silicon tips, and they just fit like a glove. They're amazing.
I'm with you. That's the earbuds I use because they fit so well.
All right, let's talk a little bit. Actually, we'll take a break here and we'll thank a sponsor because we got some apologizing to do. We'll be right back. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Indeed. AI can do some incredible things, but for most jobs in your company, you need a good old-fashioned carbon-based life form, preferably a brilliant one, preferably as soon as possible. If you're looking for great minds that move the world, you can hire them with Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent super easy and fast. And with tools like Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resume on Indeed fits your job description immediately, it is the tool that you want for your job search. and Indeed Skill Search, which reduce hiring time by 27%. You can choose from over 130 skills tests or add your own, then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. So if you are hiring, you absolutely need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/ACP. That's $75 for a sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/ACP. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/ACP. Indeed.com/ACP. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, so earlier this week, if you're following along with the trials and tribulations of publishing leaks and rumors, you will likely have noticed that John Prosser, the leaker slash front page tech YouTuber, teased something about Google News then the morning of the 9th, which was last Friday. We heard that the Galaxy or the Pixel 5a was canceled. That was what John Prosser said. And you know, we'd been hearing some rumors about this, the Pixel 5a. The leaks looked very similar to the Pixel 4a 5G. We were hearing that it was going to be powered basically by the same hardware platform. And then we had heard rumors that it was going to get pushed from the Google I.O. timeline to somewhere closer to later in the summer, which is when the Pixel 4a and 4a 5 or the 4a series launched. And then when he said that, we obviously reached out to some of our sources and asked them for confirmation, and we got some confirmation that it was indeed dead in the water. Then a few minutes after we published that, Google counters this narrative by confirming a bunch of what we got right, but also correcting a couple of major things that we got wrong. This will be a phone that you can buy if you are in one of two countries, in the US or Japan. And we are hearing that it might also come to India later on. But that is not a full-on cancellation. They will still release it. And that is what we need to apologize for, because we did not wait for more confirmation from our sources before publishing. So it happens. People get things wrong. But we doubled down on somebody else's leak. We added to it, and we had to correct ourselves, which was shitty. I mean, I'm gonna swear because it sucks. But we stand by our reporting to some extent, because we got most of it right. This is a phone that its predecessor was available in 9 countries. It was available in Canada. It was available in Germany. It was available in Spain, Taiwan, Ireland, Singapore. Like, these are big markets, the United Kingdom. This phone, the Pixel 5a, which Google actually confirmed will be called the Pixel 5a 5G, which is a terrible name.
Stupid Google.
Oh, God.
Is not going to be available in most of the regions that its predecessor was available in. So yeah, I just want to like close it up by saying that, like, it's important. We should have done more of our due diligence. We should have dug into it a little bit more. But ultimately, because of the supply constraints for a lot of the silicon that goes into these phones, Google is ultimately canceling it in a lot of countries, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, we were wrong, and I was wrong. I was part of that. I effed up. But if this phone doesn't release sometime very soon, and they don't find a way to release it day one in India, it's dead anyway. They might as well not make it. They're going to lose money. Google is the master of losing money, but this is the formula to lose money. It's stupid.
I will say, yeah, the Pixel 5a should have been the best-selling Pixel phone of the year, because the Pixel 4a was a knockout, and the Pixel 4a 5G is still a pretty damn good phone if you care about 5G. I mean, I don't get only releasing, like, if you were going to scale back either phone, like, take away the Pixel 6 XL, but keep chips for a for your Pixel 8 device, because that's the one that people actually can afford, and that's the one that people are actually going to buy in numbers. Like, the Pixel 4a sells out sometimes still. Even before the chip shortage really began, it would still sell out semi-regularly.
But I think a bigger problem, and Google knows this because they've said it, India is where everything mobile is at right now. And Samsung made strides to get a decent market share in India. The Chinese brands have India locked up. If Google wants to just break even, it has to get these phones day one in India, where people are buying phones a magnitude of sales higher than they are in the rest of the world.
I mean, the Pixel 5, the Pixel 4 series wasn't available in India.
Right.
I don't think the Pixel...
No, I don't think any Pixel has it?
No, I think it has.
I think the Pixel 4a has been available in India.
No, the Pixel 5 is not available in India. So the Pixel 4a is not either. That's weird.
Yeah, I know the past few haven't been, and that's just the dumbest thing ever.
Oh, wait, no, this is the Pixel Store.
Pixel 4...
This is the Google Store. Sorry, yeah, there's no Google
Store. The Pixel 4a is available in India and has been since day one.
It's just not on the Google Store. That's
or at least
what this
it's
is.
Been available in India since October when it launched for the rest of the world.
Either way, this is not good. It's not a good thing for Google, and we're hearing that it's because of Qualcomm, the Snapdragon 765 that was going to go into the Pixel 5a is incredibly constrained right now. Qualcomm can't make enough chips. They have to commit to existing contracts. The Pixel 4a 5G is still being manufactured, and that is something that Google will not let up in the countries where it's available today. So that's what's going to happen. The Pixel 5a 5G will be available in two markets where there should be enough demand for it, and then in the rest of the markets where they were going to launch it, they will continue selling the Pixel 4a series. And hopefully next year, where we're not in this mess anymore, Google will either have a mid-range Google Silicon chip that'll go into its A series, or the supply constraints that are affecting Qualcomm and every other, you know, silicon manufacturer will have lifted by then.
But if you look into that a little bit, Qualcomm is affected a lot more than everybody else, but it's not the numbers that Qualcomm can make. It's the demand. They can't meet it. You don't hear stories about phones, you know, we wanted to release this with a MediaTek chip, but they couldn't make them. MediaTek is getting TSMC or Samsung or whoever to build them for them, you know, at a normal pace. The Qualcomm's latest release of chips, especially their mid-range chips, are so good, everybody wants them, and Qualcomm just can't get them made fast enough. So the chip shortage, and then the other end, a company like Apple that designs such a super complicated chip that's extremely difficult to manufacture, of course, they're going to be slowed down just because of the component shortage. I really think this is the perfect time for Google to make a move. They only need 5 million chips. They're never going to sell more than 5 million Pixel 6s. They could get TSMC or somebody to, you know, rush them out, even if they had to pay, you know, 5% more to get a new assembly line built, because they're spending $1 billion at least anyway to get these chips manufactured. So I think this is the time where Google needs to move in and take control of its destiny.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Qualcomm, I mean, it's the success. It's a two-prong issue, really. The fact that flagship phones are more expensive than ever have made it so that Qualcomm's 600 series and 700 series chips are in way higher demand than ever. And then we also have the success of Chinese brands like Oppo, Vivo, and Xiaomi that are going into more markets with those mid-range chips.
Right. And because the chips themselves are so damn good.
Absolutely, right.
So
It's a good problem to have for Qualcomm.
Yeah, Qualcomm's happy about the whole mess.
And it's reflected in its share price.
Yep.
So if you're a Qualcomm shareholder, you're loving this right now, but not so much if you're waiting for a phone like the Pixel 5a. All right, let's move on. I want to finish up talking about Google getting Flock blocked. So I think we've spoken about Flock on the podcast before, Jerry, but I just wanted to, it stands for Federated Learning of Cohorts, but I just want to, now that it's sort of being tested and we are hearing publicly that some of Chrome's competitors are not going to be on board with this, give us the rundown of what Flock is, what it's trying to replace, and how it might impact you being the listener if you are browsing the web when cookies have been disabled for tracking, which is going to happen soon-ish.
All right. First, third-party cookies suck. If they were used as intended, they wouldn't. But so many companies and websites use them to track you when there's no need to track you, that they're really bad, and that's why there's a million different ways to block them. And even Google has moved to where they're not going to be able to be used in Chrome in the, you know, not the immediate future, but the nearish future. And that's how advertisers, including Google, track you on the web to make sure they show you the right ads. What Flock is, it's another step. You are no longer individually tracked. The web browser on your device itself places you into a group of like-minded people who visit the same sorts of websites. And that group gets tracked. It's done between, you know, you and your phone, and it's encrypted, and I am sure there's some way Google could find out and trace it back to you if they really wanted to. I don't see why they would have a desire to do that. If their scheme works as they think it will, they're going to be able to make just as much money, and you get the benefit of having one more barrier between exposing your information to somebody else. That's basically what it is. I like to look at websites about fishing or working on old cars. I'll get tossed in a group of people who like fishing and who like old cars. Advertisers will say, hey, can you show my ad to people who like to learn about old cars? And Google will say, sure, we can. And they'll send it out. And if my little number that lives on my phone matches a certain little number about ads for fishing or old cars, those are the ads I'll see.
If it'll make me stop getting ads on my Chromecast TV about all of the investment stuff that I'm not really that keen on yet, but my dad was just here and he kept going to all of these websites. And so those cookies are somehow attached to my IP too.
Well, that could be your service provider, or maybe you were logged into Chrome while he was looking on your machine or something. But this...
Oh, no, he did the whole thing on his phone and his MacBook. Like, I can't get him to, like, I was kept pushing the Lenovo Duet at him, like, please use a bigger screen. Yeah. No, he wants to read it off of his Pixel 3a XL.
That's probably your ISP. I know Comcast pulls crap like that. They intercept cookies and inject their own. So there's plenty of other reasons, but this, I mean, could potentially solve that problem if you use Chrome, because it's not going to accept third-party cookies anymore, which means the web is going to evolve.
Okay, so you have written that this is ultimately good for people. It will evolve the way that ads are targeted, and it will make them less invasive in the sense that by putting people into categories, it makes individuals like you and me much harder to...
Yes.
Personally track, right? This week alone, though, there were three relatively small but still popular third-party browsers
that came out
against this initiative from Google. DuckDuckGo, which not only runs a very privacy-focused search engine but has its own browser that's focused on privacy. Brave, which is actually a Chromium-based browser but does not track you. And Vivaldi, which I also believe is based on Chromium, if I'm not mistaken. And all of them have come out and said that Flock is not good for users. It is self-serving for Google. And ultimately, if Google is the one that says that Flock is as replacing third-party cookies is good for privacy, it's only because Google is taking advantage of the fact that it runs the largest ad network in the world and that it is the one providing the channels for these ad for these cookies to track users.
Yes, yes, and yes.
So they're not wrong, Jerry.
Right. They're not, but that still does not get rid of the benefit of that barrier between your information and another company. That doesn't make it a bad thing just because it's better for Google than any other company out there. That's, you know, true. That's something for maybe a regulator to look at or whatever. But as far as you, a user that uses the internet and is, you know, most of us aren't real security professionals or real whack jobs that wear tinfoil hats. We just want it to be easy for, you know, our information not to be thrown everywhere. This is a good thing. And it can be both. It can be good for us, but bad for the industry.
Okay, so let's raise a couple of the concerns, starting with DuckDuckGo. Now, DuckDuckGo says that it will block Flock, and that it is bad for privacy because it puts you in a group based on your browsing history, and any website that can get that group ID is able to target and fingerprint you. So you're not necessarily. It's almost like, instead of targeting Jerry Hildenbrand, it's targeting
the group.
Jerry Hildenbrand's like friend group or your home that may include you and your wife and your dog and your kid and your friends, but ultimately it's still targeting people specifically. It's just less granular.
What they don't explain is how is a website going to get that number? It's encrypted. It's on your phone. It's not transmitted. So, they forgot that part.
I mean, this is what DuckDuckGo is saying.
I know. And I don't blame them for saying it because they're very unhappy because it disrupts their business model. So, of course, there are a lot of things they don't like,
but
lot of things they can point out.
DuckDuckGo is concerned that who maintains the Flock database, right? It's Google.
It's Google.
Right? Google is going to take advantage of its dominant market position, and even if it's encrypted, even if it is not data that Google itself is going to use for ad targeting, right? It's going to silo that database off. It is still owned by Google and not a third party ISO or something that like an independent organization.
And Google has shown time and time again that they're not afraid to break promises. I do get that. I really get that. But I don't think it's in Google's own best interests to break this promise because that doesn't benefit them. If they do keep it separate and keep it secure and keep it away from any prying eyes, they still get all the benefit. So why wouldn't they?
Vivaldi calls out another potential privacy invasion related issue with Flock in that if you are somebody who browses taboo websites, right? Mm-hmm. If you are into certain things that are not considered mainstream in our society, and I'm not just talking about like browsing Pornhub, but like there are legitimate cultures that are considered part of the, you know, that are not part of the mainstream, right?
Right.
And because you are going to be tracked using Flock and put into one of these cohorts, that may, if Flock is eventually reverse engineered and IDs are able to be identified as, and you could then take that information and build a profile about somebody, right? Which we don't know if that's going to be the case, but one can assume that because the data inside these Flock IDs is so valuable, it's going to be very, very interesting to third-party tracking companies, just as mobile GPS and cell tower data has been bundled up and sold as a way to build profiles for ad targeting and tracking. This could be potentially very damaging to people who don't want to be identified, even at a higher non-granular level, right? Even at the 1,000-foot level, knowing that you are into kinky stuff and that if by reverse engineering your ID may identify you, even if you don't want it to, even if you haven't enabled cookies, even if you're in incognito mode, that is problematic.
And they're correct. If you are the type of user who will only use Vivaldi as a web browser and make sure that all cookies are blocked and your tracks are covered, then that is better than Flock. But most people aren't. Most people fire up their web browser, click yes whenever they see a dialogue because they just want it out of their way so they can look at the internet. This is better for those people.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we didn't even talk about the political implications. So if you're a political dissident and you're a refugee or you are an activist and you are trying to drum up support for an anti-government organization, potentially your Flock ID could expose you if it again is reverse engineered.
Maybe Google has done a lot of really bad things that I've railed on, but there are three areas where Google has done a good job of protecting your privacy: sexual orientation, your health information, and political activity groups. I don't mean Republican, Democrat here in the States. I mean, you know, you speak out against China. I don't think Google will ever change on those fronts because they need something they can tout what a good job they've done.
And also, I mean, you're not going to have just one Flock ID, right? Like, you get put into like 25 different cohorts depending on what you go to, and you can clear out your cohorts over time.
I'm sure, but you probably only get one ID, and there's going to be an API that can take that ID and know which groups you're in based on it. So I don't think it has to maintain, you know, 100 different IDs, because that would be, you know, 100 times easier for someone to hack into. I mean, in the end, you have to trust Google, and that's hard to do. I get it. I don't trust Google. When Google says something, I read everything I can about it. And then the first thing I ask is, well, what's best for Google's bottom line? And I don't see any reason for Google to break any of the promises that they've put forward with this particular thing. So I think I'm a champion of it. Let's do it. Get rid of the third-party cookies, and then we can start all over until somebody finds a way to ruin Flock.
And then we'll start all over again.
Right. We'll have Flock 2, Electric Boogaloo. Oh,
my favorite movie of all time.
Yes.
All right. I think that's pretty flocked up. So we will move on. We will end the show this week by talking about what's making us happy. And I would just like to point out that having you two on the podcast always really makes me happy. So,
aww.
But
that's
Jerry,
a cop out. Give us a real one.
No, I'm going last as I always do. I wanted to open it up with a positive opening salvo. Jerry, what is making you happy this week?
I mean, this is maybe a little adult. Savages is a Netflix. It's a movie. It's not like a series or anything, but it's a really cool crime drama. It's very violent. It has a lot of drug related content in it. So it's not something that you want your kids to watch without your supervision, but I think it's an awesome movie and I really enjoyed it. In fact, I enjoyed it enough, I watched it twice.
Like, that you watched the show twice?
No, it's a movie. It's not a show. It feels like it should have been a show. They packed a lot into 2 hours. And if it was a show, I would be much happier. But it was a really good, gritty, dirty, ugly, messy crime drama.
Oh, okay. Oliver Stone.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look. It felt like an Oliver Stone movie.
Yeah, it is. It's John Travolta, Benicio del Toro. Is that the one?
Yep.
Yeah. Oliver Stone.
And it is definitely, if you like that kind of movie. If you don't like that kind of movie, it's 2 hours of nothing but that. So you won't like it. But if you like that kind of gritty, nasty, down-to-earth drama, this is a great movie that you should watch.
All right. That is Savages.
Savages.
On not sandwiches, which is what I thought no. you originally said.
I love sandwiches, on, too. On I had Netflix. A grilled cheese today with a little bit of bacon. That made me kind of happy.
All right. Eat a sandwich while you're watching Savages. That's what Jerry says. All right, Ara, what is making you happy this week?
Well, I'm going to just go in like the complete opposite direction because this last week and this week has been premiere week for all the new animes of the season. And there are just these absolutely, there's three of them that I'm watching this season. They're all really comfy. Isekai, which is another world animes where people get transported into a different world. But they are all super duper comfy. They're all super duper laid back. And the one I'm liking the most has the most ridiculous title. It's called I've Been Killing Slimes for 300 Years and Maxed Out My Level. But it's about this this girl. She's a workaholic. She literally works herself to death in her previous life. So she gets so God reincarnates her in a new world and makes her immortal, makes her young forever and gives her magic. So that way she can stay young and immortal forever. But she basically just is completely laid back. It's like, okay, I'm just going to kill a couple of slimes so I have enough money to buy myself food. And I'm going to just veg out and nap and cook for myself and just have all of the relaxation I didn't get in my previous life.
Wait, slimes. Explain to me like I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Like if you ever played any video game or JRPG.
Like little blobs?
Blobs, slimes.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, so I've been watching that one. I've been watching The Saint's Magic Power is Omnipotent. And then I've been watching Slime Diaries, which is the spinoff from That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, which just finished the first half of its second season and was really good.
You know, I want to see your video browsing history. That would be really interesting. a lot of yeah, slime no. stuff in there.
Eh.
I'm just picking on you, Era.
I mean,
fine.
these series are great. I have no problem saying publicly aloud that I love these. These are all comfy AF. I love it.
I'm sure that there is like a slime YouTube. Like it's just like a seedy underbelly of YouTube.
DeviantArt/slime.
Oh, yeah. Everybody just like covering themselves in slime and rolling around in it.
And squishing tacos with their feet. Yeah, I'm done.
All right. Well, mine is hardware. It's a pair of earbuds that I've been meaning to review for the site, and I just want to talk about them a little bit. They are from a company called Earin that doesn't get a lot of love, except for Michael Fisher, actually, who's been one of their biggest proponents. He reviewed their previous two earbuds. This is a new pair called the Earin A3. And they are the world's smallest open earbuds, as the company calls them. And I really wasn't sure what to expect when I got them. But they are truly tiny. And you open the case, which is aluminum, and it's got this really nice lid that kind of like thwops open and close. And it's just super satisfying. It's made of machined aluminum. And it's like a really nice matte finish. And it's just a well-made case. You open them up, and the earbuds themselves are interchangeable, so there's no left or right. You can put one in either ear. They're identical. And because they're so small, it's almost like one of those spy earpieces that you saw in like a James Bond movie. They just disappear in your ear. And while the sound quality is not amazing, they're really good for what they are. But because they're open, they let the outside noise in. There's no ANC, nothing like that. But for what they are, they've become my go-to walk around the house listening to a podcast earbud. And for a lot of people who work from home, they're so comfortable that you can literally leave them in all day and not really realize that you're doing it. And because of the open design, you can talk to somebody normally and have a regular conversation. They don't look like AirPods where like even if you are talking to somebody and they can hear you, it looks like they're being rude because you can see the AirPods in their ears. This is different. You don't really see them. They don't stick out at all. They're like $160, I think, so they're pretty expensive. They have wireless charging. They're water resistant. They're durable. I've dropped them a ton of times and they're still fine. And overall, I just think they're great products and they're very different. They're just very different from all the other earbuds that you might consider buying right now. And if you're a work from homer, then I think they're definitely worth considering. And yeah, so that's the Erin, E-A-R-I-N, A-3, the Erin A3. All right.
Well, they make some neat stuff.
Yeah, it's a small Swedish company. I spoke to the CEO when they were launching this. It's a great, great company. They really care about being different, and they want to do something innovative. And I don't like everything about this product, but I understand the reasons, so I can respect it, if nothing else.
Okay, I want to direct you to the Erin M1s, and you try them for all of us since they're $250.
I have them. I don't like them as much.
Oh, okay.
They're a bit older too. They're like 3 or 4 years old, so they're missing out on a lot of the like efficiency side of things. Anyway, we got to end it there. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know if you have any feedback. podcast@androidcentral.com. You can find Jerry at GB Hill. You can find Ara at Ara Wagco. You can find me at Journey Dan. You can find all of us at Android Central. Thank you again for listening. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adios.